This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand.
Live off the record with Chicago Line is sponsored by the Cleveland Clinic, Fidelity Bank of Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Walang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I hope that you are doing well today. Our numbers to call the show if you want are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. Today, I want to talk to you, and maybe you can talk to me and get your response to it. I want to talk to you about what I regard as the five most surprising things about politics I learned while I was in it. Surprising. Not five things I learned, because I learned a lot of things while in politics, but five of the most surprising things. And then maybe as I talk to you about those surprising things, you can see how they relate to your experience yourself with politics. That doesn't mean you were in it, but your experience with it, because most of us as adults have interacted with politics in one form or the other, either as a voter or as a campaigner, some people as an actual participant in the political process. But we certainly also interacted with politicians. And I want to talk about some of the surprising things that I discovered while I participated in politics. Some of them may not even have been surprising to you, but they sure turned out to be surprising for me. And before I do that, I want to thank Mr. Darren Wood, who did call me, the president of the hotel union. He did call me. He indicated that someone said to him that I had mentioned him or wanted to talk to him about the comment he made about how hotel workers had been taken for a ride for too long. I had a genuine interest in understanding what he meant by that. I didn't have any assumptions about it. And I was gratefully called. He was very generous and very courteous. We had a wonderful discussion. And what he explained to me was, in the context of this request by employers to receive less of an increase for hotel workers who get gratuity insofar as minimum wage is concerned, he said, in the context of that, he said, from the time that minimum wage was established, and that was established under the Ingram administration, he said that there was a disadvantage given to hotel workers who get gratuity in that the minimum wage took into consideration their base wage and their gratuity, so that if your base wage and your gratuity combined to be more than minimum wage, then you never got a minimum wage, right? You paid it as a combination of something. And he said that was always a kind of disadvantage for such workers, because gratuity fluctuates when you have less robust times in the season. And that is true. I mean, you know, you can earn, while the gratuity itself may be mandatory, well, you can get $100,000 in collective gratuity this season, but then when the season dies down, you get maybe $2,000 or so. And so people then don't get as much pay as might be perceived by the fact that in the high season, they get more. I understood that. Now, I wonder, and I don't know this to be the case, I don't remember offhand, I don't know if you combine gratuity and base pay, and the gratuity and the base pay don't combine to give you minimum wage, then it wouldn't it be against the law for such pay, minimum wage, not to be paid, because you are required, the employer is required to pay you minimum wage, right? I don't know. But he also made it, pointed out, and I think sensibly so, that, you know, you have not all workers in the tourism industry, in the hotel industry, get gratuity. And so when you ask for those workers who get gratuity not to be given the total amount of the minimum wage increase, are you suggesting that there should be this kind of discrimination between those who work in the industry and get gratuity and those who don't get gratuity in the industry? And what about other industries across the country? You know, so again, I'm grateful to him for his clarification, and at least his information about what he meant. And I think, you know, he's helped me to appreciate better what he meant. We didn't talk about whether I agreed or disagreed. That was not the point. I wanted to understand what it was he was saying to us about that being taken for a ride. So it wasn't, I didn't gather from him that there was this general disagreement or this general sense that all these workers have been so poorly treated and that kind of stuff. I didn't get that sense from our conversation. As he put it to me, it was in the context of this request being made by hotel employers. And I understood that. I understood that quite well. I'm curious though. I really am curious. Do workers in the hotel industry get paid in base wage less than minimum wage? Minimum wage is $210 a week. Are hotels really, in terms of just base pay now, are hotels paying just that? People literally getting $210 a week in the hotel sector? Actually, I should have asked Mr. Woodman if he's listening, somebody could send me, text me, and let me know. I really would like that. That would be really surprising. Really surprising that on balance, hotel workers, house people and maintenance, they're getting like minimum wage. I mean, literally the $210 a week or less. Or those who get gratuity get less than $210 a week plus their gratuity? Really? That would be surprising for me. I certainly don't know the answer, but that would be surprising for me. All right. Okay, we have a question here. It says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Huge fan of the show. What's your take? Thank you, by the way. What's your take on public transportation and the fuel crisis? Drivers are paying more than 50% of what they earn on fuel. This government is flat out rejecting a rate increase. Is this essential service going to survive? That's a good question, actually. It's a good question. You know, this is where politics meets at a crossroad between the reasonable and the pragmatic, right? The reasonable and the pragmatic. let's be real. Let's be real, folks. The public transportation drive folks, the bus drivers, their revenue is price controlled. They cannot increase their prices unless they get approval from the government. Okay? So what we know for certain is that their revenue is fixed at any given point in time. We know that to be true. Now, if they fill a bus out, they get the maximum of that fixed revenue. If they don't, then they get less than that, but they will never go above the maximum of a full bus load because the ticket price is fixed until the government changes it. We also know that without a shadow of a doubt, we know that their cost of operation has gone up. We know that. We know that to be a fact, okay? Gasoline prices is higher, much higher. You know it for yourself. The cost of even things that they use to service their equipment has gone up. So they have had an increase in cost with no increase in revenue. So they have had a squeeze on any profit that they can make, inclusive of the salary, wages they can put in their pockets from the revenue that they earn. We know that to be true. We know that to be true, that the government cannot deny that that is the reality of their circumstance. And so legitimately, they are crying for relief. That's what the bus drivers are doing. They are crying for relief because they have been squeezed. Now, let me tell you something. Operators, now I have to check to see if this is the case, but for bus drivers, but the operators of gas stations and the people who sell price controlled items in the food stores, here's how it works. They get to say to the government, my essential cost of goods have gone up. I am therefore applying for an increase in price to reflect the change in my cost. They get to do that. And the government will, the minister responsible for consumer affairs, which I have been in the past, will sign off on that almost as an automatic something once they can prove that that cost has gone up. Why are bus drivers not subject to the same kind of almost automatic consideration? Now, they would have to do the kind of bookkeeping things to do to ensure that they can justify their cost increase, but they don't. Why are they not treated that same way? Because here is where politics comes at a crossroad between the reasonable and the pragmatic. The governments of the Bahamas, politicians are very sensitive to the things that hurt, in quote, the poor man, the average man. Very sensitive. And so typically they try not to do those things that can overtly appear to pinch the poor man, the average man. See, in the food store, the rich and the poor shop. Okay? So you increase the prices there, you know the poor getting there, but you know the rich and the poor going in there. In the on gasoline, the rich and the poor buying gasoline. The middle class and the upper class are the ones who buy the most gasoline, right? So, and then the price goes up and that, yeah, you know it hurts, but that's covering everybody. Ain't too many middle income and rich people in the Bahamas catching the bus? I used to catch the bus from where I lived out west to Nassau Gadia with regularity. So I would take, I don't remember the number of the bus. I don't know if it was number 10, 11, 12. I would catch a number of the bus from out west, North Nassau Bayou to downtown. And then I got on another bus from downtown. I took that bus right straight. It used to drop me almost right in front of the Guardian. Almost, not close. We're very near opposite KFC. I did that regularly, right? So I know catching the bus in Nassau. And, you know, most people who are middle income, upper middle income, or upper income people ain't catching the bus in Nassau. In fact, they would be embarrassed to do what I did. And I was a former minister of state for finance catching the bus. Why I was catching the bus? But my car wasn't here in Nassau. So I needed to get to the Guardian. And it was a convenient way to get to the Guardian. I had to avoid parking or gas or anything like that. And it worked for me. I had no issues with it. I used to take the bus, go to the University of Bahamas until my car arrived, right? So, but most middle income people ain't doing that. So when you talk about increasing the bus fare, now the politician is worried about, man, you going to increase the cost to the poor. But the truth of the matter is, are you really treating the poor with any dignity when you are depriving the people who provide the service to the poor with the opportunity to properly price their products so that they can sustain their service? Are you really doing that? You're not. I mean, the poor ain't gonna feel it, and they may not care, but the reality is, it is reasonable for bus drivers to request an increase in light of their cost increase, but it is not politically pragmatic for the government to do so. So the politician ain't gonna do so, is reluctant to do so. I understand both sides of the argument. And that's why I say this is where politics gets to meet at a crossroad between what is reasonable and what is politically pragmatic. And that's where we are. So what do I think? Listen, I think that the bus drivers are in a very difficult situation, a very hard place. They are operating in a poor economy. They are operating in a high cost environment. They are operating in an escalating cost environment where inflation is at historically high levels. And they are dealing with a political system that is jittery on doing anything that might appear to be increasing the cost to the poor, and to some degree, legitimately so, to some degree, you know? And so it's they are caught between a rock and a hard place. Now, might they decide to shut down their service and create disruption for the poor? They might decide to do that. Will that move the politicians to address their concerns? I don't know. Maybe there might be, if the government assesses that this cost issue for them might be a marginal, might be a temporary one, the government might consider subsidizing the buses for a period of time, in order to ensure that you don't get an increase for the poor, the users of the bus system. The drivers get some revenue relief. Now, what that means is, this isn't a freebie, but that means taxpayers, mostly middle income and upper income taxpayers, will pay to subsidize the cost of using the bus for those persons deemed to be lower income persons who typically use the bus. Is that a good social policy? Is it good fiscal policy? That's a judgment some of us, you will have to make, right? But it is a way of getting around what is a situation in which you're between a rock and a hard place where you're doing nothing. Nothing good for the drivers, nothing good for the, you're given an unfair advantage to the users of the busing system. That's one way of doing it, a subsidy for a period of time. Who knows what's gonna happen? You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. We're talking about some of the things that surprised me in politics.
Marsh the car. The lady run into me, Marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit our website at fidelitygroup.com.
This is God Union Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
Z Live. I'm Shabab Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We got all kind of stuff going on this side of the thing. I don't know what's going on, producer. I don't know if that's me. Something going on. Kind of feedback that we were having, and I mentioned it, we could clear it up, so maybe we can clear it up. Okay, we have a text, yes, that's great show as usual. Tell that text the public service is super horrible, lackluster, no organization, they can't drive. Do you take the public transport system? Do you actually use it? Like, are you just making that comment based on what you hear, or do you actually use it? And I'm not asking if you use it once or twice. Do you regularly use the public transport system regularly? I had mostly good experiences. I had some bad experiences for sure, but I had mostly good experiences. So that is true about most things in life. You could have both good and bad experiences. So, but my general experience was that it was fairly good. I see some crazy things happening with bus drivers and what have you, but I mean, my experience is fairly good. So I don't want to hear any comments about bus system from people who don't use it. people who use it, you know, it would be better to hear it from them. But I only could comment about my experience. I know I've heard people give some real horror stories about the bus system, for sure, but that hasn't been my experience. This text has been lying. One of the things that surprised me was I was campaigning for a candidate, the person won, and I didn't get to see that person in 3 years. Okay. Yeah, you could share with me some of your surprising things about politics, too. Thanks. Yeah, okay. Says, what about Sandals employees who don't get tips? Check Sandals. Only persons who get tips is butlers. Yeah, well, they work in a all-inclusive environment, right? So I don't know how that works. So like I used it about 9 times. The last time a hold was in the bus door, and the guy asked me to put my hand in the hold to open the door. I looked at him. Yeah, but I mean, come on, man. That's every bus. That's every time. Come on. We have to be more reasonable than that, right? We have to be more reasonable than that. We have to have, you know, a set of experiences over time. You talk about that one bus with the hold, but if you'd use it 9 times, was that true? Every time you went in the bus, it was there the holds? Come on, man. Anyway, let's do this. We don't want to get caught up in that. So some of the things that I found surprising, right? One was how quickly people's perception of you change when you win office, or even when you decide to run for office, right? That surprised me, because it was my experience observing myself and others that the minute you contest for candidacy, really, the minute you become public about that candidacy, how people start to put you in a light that is entirely different than the light they used to put you in. So let's say you were someone who was regarded by them as a good community person, you know, really solidly concerned about the community, love to work with young people and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, there are people who, the minute you contest for things, like all of a sudden, like all of that stuff was like, you were only doing it to get noticed. You were only doing it to, you know, to try and drum up votes. And like, they discount the totality of your person and being now because you decided, I want to run for office. People who decide, well, you going into politics now, you must be one of them crooked, one of them selfish, power hungry people. Like people, for no reason other than you decided I'm going to run. Mind you, the day before, you were the best thing since sliced bread for them. The day you decided to run, you're a different human being. There's no rationale and no reasoning for the difference in their attitude or perception but toward you. Other than you decided you were running. And that, so that's for the bad, right? That's on the bad side. On the good side, the minute you start to run, depending on who you decide to run for, you're now the best thing since sliced bread. If you were regarded as somebody who was an F&M supporter, and you decide to run for the PLP, now the PLP is saying you the best thing on planet Earth. If you were a PLP supporter and you decide to run for the F&M thinks you're the best thing since on planet Earth, except the ones who start to look at your cork eye and think suspiciously that you really ain't to be trusted. Why? Just because you decided to run. Now people treat you different. You know, when you get elected, now people are treating you different. I mean, they treat you like this, they give you that for free, and this soon, all because you got elected. Honestly, I mean, I hadn't run before 1997. I hadn't participated in politics at any high level before 1997. I was 29 years old when I did so for the first time. And so really, my experience with people was the experience I was having as a non-political personality. You win, and all of a sudden, the way people treat you is just totally different. You want to hear something, too? You lose on what how they treat you. Not everybody, mind you. Some of the same people who give you all this, all of a sudden, they treat you in a totally different way. That's why I tell people, listen, if you just eat chicken in the bag before you get elected, keep eating chicken in the bag. You eat corned beef and white rice before you get elected, keep eating your corned beef and white rice if you get eat sardine and grits. Because when you start getting used to that caviar steak and what have you, when them people change on you, it's going to shock you to no end. If you go to Bahamas there before you get elected, stand on the line. Stand on the line after you go to Bahamas there. If they invite you to come and help you out, Decide whether you want to accept that invitation or not. Don't just take it because you think you're somebody, because trust me when I tell you, boy, as you go up, one day by resignation or on election, you will be coming down. And you might be too short because you don't change up yourself, all that. And now you can't live with the consequence of not having all that. I watch a politician who was a cabinet minister. I ain't calling nobody name. Who was accustomed when they traveled to a certain protocol treatment. I watched them. Me and them ended up in the airport after the fact. I watched them looking around like a crazy man, don't know what to do because they was waiting to see where the help was coming from. People exchange on you. And if you have not been a part of it, it's one of the most surprising things to experience. And that was one of the surprises I got. Next surprise I got was, and this really surprised me. I remember now, I was 29 years old, never really participated in politics at any significant level. I was in a campaign general or anything like that. We have a call on the line. Let's take that call. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hey, good day. How you doing?
Hey, I'm okay, man. And yourself?
Okay. I had a question from yesterday, but I want to get topic today. I tried to call in, but somehow the phone wasn't picking up. Anyhow, I had made mention, I guess, a few years ago, I'm sure you probably have experienced it as well, when you take the kids to Atlanta, how their busing system works. You catch it, you park at a terminal, you go and get your card, the debit card, you top up or whatever for the week or how many times you want it, and then you from there you could transport from train to train or bus to bus. So even if like the government was to give them in the Bahamas, they had some kind of system like that, where if I go in from Carmichael Road to Fox Hill and I have to catch two or three buses or winter, then once I pay into the system, that's me for the day. So
that's a unified busing system with a transfer component to it. Yeah, I understand exactly what you mean.
Exactly. So something like that. You don't mind paying $250 for the day. You understand? You understand? So you will be able, once you get on and you're already in the system, now you could go downtown, jump on another bus and get another. It kills the bus drivers from having to compete as much, because now what you have is you see them on the road where they block up the road, they speed past one another, and then they do all kind of stuff trying to get to the next stop to get all the customers. You understand? So now what you have, like once they get, so if you are at the central location, the low, where City Meat Market is by Governor.
I understand exactly what you're talking about. We've talked about that for a long time. They've been working on, Glenisana Martin, when she was Minister of Transport, was working on a unified bus system for a long while. So it's been in discussions for a long while. So we're quite familiar with what you're talking about.
Right. Now, so even so, you give people value for money. You understand? So you could understand the increase in cost. I know what they're saying now is important too, because the fuel cost has gone up and they're not as getting as much as they used to get. But then too, and this ties into what I was saying about yesterday that I wanted to call in. Because right now, I know they're saying the government, and they posting the increases that of the revenue that we get, we're receiving from April and this month, that month. But coming out of the Dorian and the pandemic, you had deficits. You had a big hit. So now you only really catching up. You ain't like you making extra. The only way you could be making more is if you're making 100% plus. You understand? Then you'll be making for those years as well. So now you still really, all you're doing is making enough to sustain for now, but you're still in the debt from before. You understand?
Yeah, they also spending more though.
Exactly.
Thanks for calling, man. I appreciate it.
Ask one thing.
Hello? Sorry? Yeah, we have another call on the line. Go ahead, caller. Hi, go ahead, caller. We have another call on the line.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Yes, hi. How you doing?
Good. First time caller to your show, but I always
listen. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
This year sparked my interest, this bus situation.
Okay.
I feel like being a former bus driver and now a bus owner, mm-hmm. I feel like to start this thing off right with the folks that own the buses, with the drivers that own their own buses, who are leasing plates from other individuals.
Okay.
I think the government should do what they did with the taxi drivers. That's a start. Because with that, you're looking at about $300 per month per plate.
Okay.
Now you have some people who could afford two buses, three buses, but don't own one bus plate. Then you have people who have five and six, seven bus plates in these drawers in their houses under their bed and can't afford a bus.
So you're saying if people were able to get the revenue, would not have to pay that lease amount, then that would be monies in their pocket to absorb some of this cost.
That $300 a month, you know how far that can go with maybe buying a tire, maybe putting in fuel, getting your bus service. You know, the people that has these plates. I know people who have up to almost 10 bus plates don't own a bus on the road, but all of their plates are on this road. If you're getting $300 a month for each one, that's $3,000. How many people do you know in this day and age working, making $3,000 a month? Those buses, you don't have to service them. Those plates, those bus plates, you don't have to service them. You don't have to feed them. You don't have to water them. You don't have to do nothing to them other than lighting them once a year.
Right. That's a good passive income.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, but I refuse now. My bus is parked in the front of my yard, and I refuse under this brave Davis administration government that I supported handsomely. I refuse now to have the lease a plate to put on my bus. I'd rather just leave my bus parked. When my little granddaughter come home, I turn it on, turn it in the air condition, me and I go sit in it and let her run up and down in it. You know, I thank God I don't have no bank payment on it.
Right, so you waiting for a change in the way that is organized, just like they did for the taxis. And it only makes sense if you did it for the taxis, you should do it for the buses.
Sir, I've been in the bus business over 30 years. Okay, I can tell you about the bus business. I was on the 19 route. I was on the 19 route when I was 17. Okay, I'm talking about 20-something years ago.
Right.
Okay, I can tell you about it. And then the next thing, before I let you go, sir, a lot of the problems that the drivers are going through themselves, a lot of the drivers created this monster on themselves. You know, that they have a bus route that is called number 10 that goes into the Cable Beach area. I respect those between the 10 bus route and the 12B bus route. I respect those brothers highly.
Yeah, that's the route I used to take a lot.
I respect them because they organize, and you look at the, you could always tell when a bus driver just gone on number 10. Anytime you see them with their shirt or their pants and they think they just gone on the route. Then they're no real 10 driver. Because you know, sometimes you work for a company, they let you go, so you go to a next company and the man bus is on 10, so you gotta go on 10 if you wanna work. But the real 10 bus drivers and the 12 bus drivers, and believe it or not, I've never drove for none of those routes, but I always envy those fellas. They're always neat and they're organized. You'll never see a 10 bus running up and down in the road.
Yeah, I didn't see it in the months and months I was using the bus. Yeah,
and now there are some other
you.
Bus drivers. Now there are some good drivers on 15, some excellent drivers on 21, some good drivers on 19. But then in every route, you have a little crew. Road traffic has a group of people that deal strictly with public transportation, with taxi buses. And you don't see them on the road. You know, you station one of them, they should have enough of them to station one or two of them at every bus terminal. Because you know, the 15 have their terminal, the 10 have their terminal, the 21, everybody has their terminal. And they could organize that from there.
Right.
You know, if you, and then the next thing, should the police sees a 19 bus just pull off from in the front of officer's son, he then, the next 19 bus just pull up, he could see the bus in the front of him, you know. He tell him, okay. He got to go. So what you expect then?
All right. Well, I appreciate you calling, man. Thanks a lot. You helped us out a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. All right. The bus transportation system in Nassau in particular is always heated conversation. Now, you all do know that there's a bus system in Grand Bahama, right? At least in Freeport. You all know that, right? Because you're Nassauians, you all are so Nassau-centric. You all do realize that there's a bus system in Freeport, right? I don't know of any I've ever seen in any of the other islands like Abaco and Lucha, but there is a bus system in Freeport. It don't carry on like Nassau. They go into 8 Mile Rock as well. And we don't have the same, not to my knowledge. And I used to use the one that used to go to 8 Mile Rock when I managed a little grocery store for a pastor friend of mine down there too. And so I don't know what the situation about it is now, but it wasn't too bad then either. This says, I think they do a raise in fare, but the fare from $125 to $2 is a little too high. Okay, well, we'll see. All right, so let me just, before we go to our news break, let me see if I can tell you all this thing that really surprised me when I went in politics, right? It really surprised me, all right? Because you go on the campaign trail, right? Before you go on the campaign trail, you talk about all this stuff you want to do for the community, you know, parks and the school system, and you want to try and really enhance community. And in your head, most candidates for members of parliament have no clue that their job is to become legislators. They never emphasize that. They never focus on that. You never see them with a heavy agenda about passing this law, amending this law, repealing this law. You seldom see that. If you listen to me, you're listening to me. If you heard most candidates come to you with a legislative agenda, even the party with a legislative agenda, call me, text me, and let me know. Yeah, like most of them are a legislative agenda. I know you don't live in Bahamas, because it's not so. Most candidates come to you, but how they want to set up this youth program, how they want to put this park in place, like there's some local government entity. That's local government stuff. But that's what happens. You go and talk about doing this for the community and doing that for the community, and you, the voter, made people think that that's what it's about. But let me tell you what's surprising for me. Most voters in the Bahamas, well, let me put it like this. Many of the voters I encountered in the Bahamas were less interested about community things than they were about personal things. My son needed a job. My daughter needed a job. I need a job. My husband needed a job. My wife needed a job. I need a government house. I need a government job. I need a government contract. I'm trying to get this done for my son, and we weren't able to get. I need a government scholarship, blah, blah. On and on and on. Personal requests for things was what the transaction was about. My glasses, I walked the second home I went into to campaign, 29 years old, never campaigned before. Woman, I said, the woman must have been like almost 70. I said, how are you, ma'am? Said, child, I'm right here with these broke up glasses. I said, your glasses broke? Say, yeah, they break right up. I need to get them fixed, ma'am. I said, well, what's the problem? Child, you got to have money to get them fixed, you know. I said, well, how much it costs to get them fixed? I know, they say something like $265 or something like that. And I would hear request after request like that. Now, I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with somebody indicating that they have some personal issue about something, but that's not the job, though. That can't be what the exchange is about, a vote for that. In fact, that's called treating. That's called treating under the election laws of the Bahamas. You can't give and do favors for people you're asking for a vote. It's called treating. And it's illegal.
But I was just surprised. And you know what else surprised me? This wasn't only true in low-income communities, in middle-income communities. It was also true, and it was true in some upper-income communities. What changed was what the ask was in some instances. Not that they weren't asking for personal favors. It was just a different kind of ask. It also changed depending on the period in which you were living in it. Boy, if things were economically tough, oh, sugar, the ask used to be really something. That was one of the most surprising things for me, how many people were not interested in community-related things. They weren't asking you about no laws. They weren't asking you about no community things. They were asking for personal, political favors, personal things to be done. That's the second thing that really surprised me. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break from news when we come back. We'll continue our discussion. We'll be back after this.
Faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Life is full of complicated things. Trading in the Bahamian stock market doesn't have to be one of them. As a BSIC registered broker, RF Stock Brokerage is your direct line to buying and selling shares in publicly traded companies like AML, Cable Bahamas, Doctors Hospital, and more. And with priority trading and the automatic deposit of your trade proceeds and dividend payments, with RF, you're going to love the way you trade. Get started today at rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shavago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Again, I trust you're doing well. If you want to give us a call at all, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us also on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I was talking today about some surprising things I found in politics from my experience of it. I don't know if you might have some thoughts about these, or you might have some thoughts of your own about things that surprise you. The reason why these things tend to matter, you know, is if they are true, they say something about our politics. And they say something about our politics, they might say something about our governance as well, right? And I indicated one of the things that I found was how quickly people's perception of you changed depending, I mean, when you declare for office or when you actually win office. And I suspect that every single one of the current winners, participants in the political process today, know something about this. I've already heard it. I've heard people saying of you who have been elected, how quickly you've changed, how you seem to think like you know everything now, how you you can't reach you all now, so forth and so forth. Same thing one of the texters said, can't see you. They don't remember. They don't remember that you dedicate a certain period of time for that election campaigning in which you almost do it full time. They don't know and don't realize that once you get elected, if you're not a cabinet minister but you're a member of parliament, you now have your member of parliament duties, which takes you maybe 2 or 3 days of the week to be in the House of Assembly. And then you have your own personal jobs that you have to go and attend to. They don't realize that you're no longer a full-time campaign, and so you can't be running up and down to people's homes and houses. That nobody, I don't, listen to me, voters get vexed if you want. Nobody is going to be in the House of Assembly Monday, be in the House of Assembly Wednesday, be in the House of Assembly Thursday, have to work on all the other days they're not in the House of Assembly, and then take their evenings 5 days, 6 days of the week trying to see you in your home personally. It ain't gonna happen. So you might as well fix your mind that you ain't gonna see them as often as you saw them during the campaign. It don't make no sense. It will not happen. It's unreasonable, it's impractical, and it's immature politically to expect that. It is, it's unreasonable. And politicians need to speak up and be clear with people about what their expectations should be. That's why you have offices and office hours. You keep structured office hours once a week, twice a week, at a certain time when you can come and see your member of parliament, or you have constituency meetings at which you can come and attend and see your members. Back, oh, but when they were looking for the vote, they came to my house. Of course they did. It was a special dedicated period of time when they made a special effort to do so. But they are now elected members of parliament. If they're not cabinet ministers, they still have jobs that they have to go to because you don't pay them full time to do any member of parliament's job. And it is impossible to be seen regularly that way. But no, child, oh, they change. You used to see them all the time, blah, 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 blah. Now you don't see them no more. If you're a cabinet minister, your full-time job is not member of parliament, but cabinet minister. Plus you're a member of parliament. So they have the same constraints. You are not, you will not see them as regularly as you saw them during the campaign. And if you see them as regularly as you saw them during the campaign, they ain't doing their job, the other jobs. They're slunking on their other jobs if you could see them that regularly. But no, people say you change, child. Damn, they change on you. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. Enjoying the show as usual.
I make a little sense?
Or listen, making myself in trouble? Listen, I was one of the constituents when you was MP for Fort Charlotte. I thought
which part of the constituency were you?
I was directly in front of the police station on South Street.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When you used to have all the stuff that you used to have for the community.
That's
on
right.
The park there.
Right there at the police station down there on the park, yes?
Yes, sir. But listen, it's not so much that we complain that we don't see them anymore, you know. It's the fact that I feel like when they're campaigning, they should have to be a part of what they tell you. Now, listen, if we get in, we will be busy. You will see us. We'll have community meetings every once a month or whatever.
Yes.
So if you don't see me, it's not that you're not on my mind, or it's not that I'm forsaking you. It's just that because the job requires. So I feel like if they just explain that, because they're so busy trying to win, they don't care what they tell you. And some of them
will
tell you, but you know me, I could be like that. You will see me regularly. It don't happen.
I'm
in an unfortunate position because I'm in the constituency where the Speaker of the House is my MP, and I really understand what Nassau Village was saying.
Yeah.
I truly understand why they say they didn't want no more Speaker of the House.
Well, you know, the truth is, let me tell you the truth is that the governments of the Bahamas do a terrible job dealing with speakers' constituencies, because speakers tend to get special treatment in the House of Assembly. I mean, it's treatment because of their special role in the House of Assembly. The government's responsibility is to respond to the needs of speakers' constituents.
Because, I live about through one corner away from the speaker's home. And I don't hardly see her. I don't.
Yeah.
I hear that she's be around in the other part of her constituency, the other part of Bamboo Town, but she's not in the area where her house is. She is in the other section. You know, people down there complain for Mother's Day, they complain for Father's Day, they complain. You know, they for Valentine's Day, they complain as if they say she forget us. You know?
Now ordinarily you just do something special on them days, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Valentine's. Typically you just do something special.
I had some of the best MPs. I had you, I had Alfred Sears at one point, then I had Travis Robinson. You always get something from you guys.
That was standard. That was standard. That's a father saying, listen, I remember you on them special times. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yes. And the thing is, the persons in the area come to me and say, did you see her? Did you get something? No. Did I get anything? Well, the neighbor said she didn't get anything. And that's the conversation right now in her constituency.
But I agree with you that candidates should make it very clear to voters that when they win, if they win, chances are they will have to structure some time to be able to be interactive with the community because of the nature of their job.
Exactly. And I feel like the composition, she should have a meeting with the community and say, okay, this is my position. This is what I have to do. However, I have other persons from this area or that area who's going to help me out. You understand me? But they say nothing to you. So you have that expectation that you're going to see them.
I got you. I understand. So,
Kill the expectation. One time I've given up the full... I don't like part of the information. Give me the full information so I can expect it when I see it.
Am I wrong when I say that lots of people don't have the community in mind when it comes time to voting? Like, they don't talk to you about no community stuff. They only talk about their personal stuff. Am I wrong about that?
No. You're not wrong at all. I tell people I'm one of the few persons who I have never asked for or request of any MPs something personal. I usually would say to you, let me see what you could do for my community, and you got me. I don't want to see what you're doing for other people or what you're doing for personal gains. Don't matter to me. Let me see you better my community, and you always help me.
Right. Well, I appreciate you calling always. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it.
Sir.
All righty. We have a text here. Say, so Lang, are you saying I can see you I can see you 10 times in 3 months before election, but 5 years, I can't see you 5 times? We don't see that much laws passing, so what do you be doing? Hogwash? No, I think you're there wrong. I think again, you know, are you really paying attention? Are you really paying attention? Seriously, are you paying attention? Okay, first of all, right, it's your parliament, so you can, and it's on 24/7. You can see how regularly they're in the parliament. And except for summertime, it's typically 2 to 3 days a week. Passing laws, you don't just pass laws in parliament, you do resolutions, you have debates on the laws and passing. So all that is time, okay? Secondly, I didn't say you don't get to see them. I didn't say that. I said you won't see them as regularly as you saw them during the campaign. You can see them during office hours. You can see them during community constituency meetings. You can see them when they are attending your functions. You can see them when they have some special occasion in the park. So let me give you 5 times. At least you could see them. Christmas times, back to school times, Easter times, Mother's Day, Father's Day. You're going to be able to see them in your community. So don't give me that nonsense that some of you all like to do just because you want to be negative about it, right? I'm not saying some members of parliament are just lousy. I mean, they'll make no opportunity to be saying. But let's be real, man. Let's be real. Let's grow up. Grow up. Grow up. A Jamaican friend of mine said that she was shocked at how Bahamians expected to see their members of parliament with regularity. She said because for them, even during the campaign, most times what they would get is not no door-to-door. They got people drive by, hitting you. Stop, have a little meeting, they say, I'm gone. But we are spoiled. We are spoiled. There's no question about that. Very spoiled. And the only thing I would say is keep expecting it if you want. The only thing that happens is you get disappointed.
And your disappointment just turns into being sour on politics. But if that's how you want to set it up, you're free to do so. This, we have some text here, says, yes, they are paying hotel workers $210 a week, mostly employees who are on tips and or gratuities. Wow. Wow. Wow, that's something. Okay. Texas, hi, Mr. Lang, great show, very knowledgeable. Mr. Lang, you talking about minimum wage, people still on furlough, they ain't calling back and they ain't want pay you. Keep up your good work, bro. Wow. Yeah, that's true, eh? Some people still on furlough. Wow. Mr. Texas, Mr. Lang, the reason people change their perspective is because of the Westminster system and potential politicians have to fall in line to the party line. And some potential politicians are pretentious. The Westminster system doesn't require anybody to fall in line to the party line. Where did you get that information from? Show me that somewhere. Show me that in a book somewhere. People fall in line with party lines because they run for parties. I mean, think about that, right? You run for a party on a party ticket. When I ran for the FNM, this was my introduction. Hi, my name is Shivago Lang, and I'm the FNM candidate for Marco City / Port Chalet. Let me say it again. Hi, my name is Shivago Lang, and I'm the FNM candidate for Marco City and Port Chalet. The FNM funded my party paraphernalia. I carried the FNM's manifesto to my constituents. I wore FNM t-shirts and caps. The FNM funded my and assisted with the publishing of my documents for the constituents. Now that I got elected, and you know this, you the voter voted for me as an FNM candidate, voted for me. Received my FNM colored torch bearing documents. And now that I got voted in, you now talking about falling in line with the party? Man, come on, you all get real. Come on, understand your process, bro. Understand if you want to run as an independent, run as an independent. Then you don't have to fall in line with any party. But if you run on a party's ticket, just like the Democrats, the Republicans, the Conservatives, and the Liberals in the UK, if you run on those tickets, you do so because you believe in the cause of the party. Now you're going to be surprised that people are, in quote, falling in line. Well, let me just correct you. That's not Westminster. That's just common sense. That's like the Lakers. That's like LeBron James joining Lakers and still acting like he's on the Cleveland Browns, Cleveland Cavaliers team. It makes no sense. That's not how it works, okay? But it has nothing to do with the Westminster system, and it's not pretentious at all. That's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. That pretension is in your head. This text says, good drivers, Yellowbird 9 and 11, Boathawk, okay? This text says, how the female caller say that she is one of the only people not talking, taking or asking for something from a politician? Well, she... Yeah, lots of people may be in like her, but she's just, you know, she's talking for herself. All right. Texas, we need new bus routes too. At least a route from Tony Darling Highway, AF Adley to IMAX. Okay. Texas, Mr. Lang, the bus that goes into 8 Mile Rock is crazy. The speed they go with will have you scared for life. It used to be those L300 back in the early 90s. Okay. For me, that would have been, yeah, in the early 90s when I was taking bus. I've been back in that time too. Yeah. So they're crazy. This text says, good day, Mr. Lang. I don't have to worry about politicians because I don't need them. I've been quite fine without them, never voted and never will. And I'm 56 years old. Let me tell you something. To say you don't need politicians is an absolute delusion. I don't mind telling you, you're 56 years old, but it's a delusion. Okay, it's a delusion, all right? You don't need a politician to eat, to feed yourself personally, to clothe yourself, et cetera. My friend, if you need government, Without government, you have no police to protect the society. Without government, you don't have any infrastructure. Without government, you don't have public services to get a passport so that the United States will accept you to travel. Oh, and who do you think runs the government? Politicians. You need politicians. You do. But you need them as the society. You don't need them as a personal person to survive. And that you don't vote, yeah, that's up to you, right? Nobody can stop you from doing that. But just don't have nothing to say in the country. You know, wherever she busts up, wherever she go, no problem. Right? If something happens that you don't like, don't say nothing. You never try to do anything about it. But to say you don't need politicians, on a personal level, no, you don't. But on a much more understanding level of the society, come on, man. We cannot do without government, and government requires politicians, and therefore we need politicians to the extent we need government. All right? And that's why God is wiser than you and I are. And he created these authorities so that we can have order in the state. But you don't need order. You don't need order. You could live in any kind of situation. But you see, that's the luxury you have of saying those kinds of things when you have what you have. But you didn't have it, you'd see something different. Right? But that's the price. That's the price, boy. Don't go in politics looking for no gratitude. It ain't gonna happen. Not in too many spaces and places. That's fine. That's fine with me. Okay. So here's the third thing that surprised me. I mean, I really was surprised because remember now, I keep telling you, I was 29 years, I was young. I wasn't experienced in this. I didn't see a lot of this, so it surprised me. It surprised me how duplicitous some voters could be. You know what duplicitous means? Like two-faced, right? Now, when I say that, I don't want to insult anybody, but I literally mean voters can genuinely and sincerely appear to be supportive of this party one day, and the next day, or that same day, actually have been supportive of the other party. They can pretend with you that they support you, but all along they support another party for whatever reason. They could do it because they are part of the other party and they're trying to trick you and fake you out. They could do it because they're trying to get something to you because it's election time. They know people be trying to get things on an election time. Or they could just don't like you or just be trying to deceive you for whatever reason. It shocked me to no end how duplicitous voters can be. Some voters. I didn't say, oh, well, I didn't say many. I said some voters. Listen to me. I had a voter, a constituent. Man, we had a good relationship. We talked. I assisted her in some ways in getting some things done. She ended up working in a certain situation for, you know, the constituency and blah, 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 blah. Man, listen to me. On election day, that person worked with and for the other side. And you know, when I lost, this is what she told me, with the greatest sincerity. She said, next time, you will not be so naive. And she ain't lying. She ain't lying. I ain't never been that naive ever again in my life. Not about taking for granted that just because someone tells you they can support you, just because somebody looks like they can support you, don't mean they can support you at all. I've seen people, man, they'll wear. I had a fella, I was right after, remember when Tommy Turnquest was leader of the FNM and we ran in that election? That fella, I met a fella at the airport a couple of days, at least 2 days after election when Mr. Christie had won. He had on a spanking new yellow PLP shirt in the US section of the airport. And we got to talking because he was on the same line as me and I was behind him. And he started telling me, you know, we were talking, then we started talking politics. And he said, you know, I said, Tommy, man, you know, I said, FNF supporter. I said, but you wear this PLP shirt? He said, man, I did. And I have seen that over and repeatedly. people just can be, not everybody, not very deep, not, I'm not saying most people, but people can be duplicitous, right? And that says something to me, because I don't understand why you would do that. Why would you be pretentious that way? Like, I could see someone who's a part of an opposition party or the opposite party maybe trying to infiltrate to get information. I can understand something, because that kind of stuff happens. I mean, espionage happens among nations trying to get information and get an advantage. So I understand that. But why you would literally falsify yourself to pretend to be something you're not, and then get mad when your politicians deceive you? Listen to me now. You deceive your politician, then turn around and get mad when the politician deceive you. Seriously? I ain't gonna tell you no lie. This literally happened to me. This literally happened to me. Some voters after the election, the FNM lost the election, came and complained that they got a certain amount of money to vote against me. And listen to me. I'm telling you what happened to me. And they were complaining that some of the money was fake money, counterfeit. And that was why they came to complain. Y'all hearing me? These people took money to vote, complaining about getting money that was fake. There's it was short duplicity among some voters, was one of the big surprises of my political life. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our listing. We'll be back after this break.
To think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Feel the glory of the 2022 World Athletics Championships in Eugene, Oregon. Feel the glory as Team Bahamas strides for gold July 15th through 24th. The World Athletics Championships, 10 days, 2,000 athletes, over 200 countries battle for supremacy. Join Guardian Media for daily updates on Team Bahamas at the World Athletics Championships at Track City, USA. Brought to you by Fidelity Bank Bahamas and by PowerAid, distributed by the Caribbean Bottling Company. Feel the glory at the World Athletic Championships 2022.
Sone Milowivo opens the throttle and comes down the home stretch with a commanding advantage.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, we'll walk this road together, through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone, holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lime, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We have some text here. This text says, Lang, I like your show, but tell me something. Does Parliament have any breaks, even though they might, parliamentarians have any breaks, even though they might still not have time to mingle? Parliament does get breaks. You're talking Parliament tends to take its longest break at summertime. So you might get a month or two off at the summertime. You also get a break at Christmas time, in the Easter. So there are some breaks that the Parliament gets. It does depend, though, on the government and its legislative agenda. But yeah, they get some breaks sometimes. Somebody sent me a text, say laugh out loud, Mr. Lang, please tell more stories on your show. That story was funny. Man, today something. I remember I was during the campaign, fella came to me, asked me for $30, you know. And he was half wet, you know, it's half wet. So he asked me for $30. I said, listen, I cannot be giving you money at election time because that's cheating and that's against the law. And I could get disqualified for doing some money run on and cuss me. And you ain't trying to get no support. And you ain't trying to get no vote. So forth and so forth. Money cuss me something favorable. Yeah, but you know, people just trick you that way. You gotta be careful. They will trick you, they'll record you, and that's evidence of your treating, and it could cause you your candidacy during the election. But I remember listen to me, folks, I'm 29 years old. I must have weighed 165 pounds at the time. You know, I'm very young looking, slim guy. I go into Fort Charlotte. This is the very first day of my campaign, and Ingram told me, Lang, this is what you do full time. You wake up in the morning, you go campaigning and tell it's time to go to sleep. That's your job for the next couple of months. Go campaigning. So I went campaigning. I started on VZ Street. We parked on Market Street. I walked VZ Street. And then I ended up in the house of this old lady. She had been about 80-something years old. What is my witness, folks? I'm day on the line. So I knocked on the door. I said, hello, ma'am. My name is Shivago Lang. I'm the FNM candidate for Fort Charlotte. It's nice to meet you. This is just exactly what the woman said to me. The woman looked up at me. She said, well, Jesus Christ, look what Ingram's saying here to come ask to vote for me, for him. Say, boy, you look like you on crack. God is my witness. That's the first thing I heard in the first house I went into to go ask for a vote. Jesus Christ, look what Ingram's saying here to come ask to vote for him. Say, boy, you look like you on crack. I was so brave in those days as a young man. I was so unfazed. I simply said, anyway, ma'am, it was nice to meet you. I left. But you know, God is good. God is so good. While I was walking just away from that house with that experience, I walked through a corner and two young men were on the road, street, young voters. And I said to them, I said, you know, hi, I'm the FNM candidate for Fort Charlotte. You know, can I talk to you?
This is what they did. Their face lit up. Say, you are the F&M candidate? A young man like you? For real? But I vote me F&M. Go on, said, boy, that's what a young man need. He need a little bit of encouragement. I'm not a old woman, put it on me. Oh, boy. The place of Samuel and I. They look like you are crying. That's what the woman says. Man, that was the enemy trying to discourage you. Thought is my support. Say, 7 years, young fellas, Micah 7. Yeah, I realize God was sending me some encouragement. we have some text here. Let me get them to it. Say, Mr. Lang, these people that expect MP to be their personal supplier. Their job is to put laws in place to benefit the country as a whole and put things in place to help those in their constituencies. We have developed a culture of MP attending funerals, weddings, giving gifts during Mother's Day, Father's Day, and holidays. You got that right. This text says, good afternoon. My advice, you need to respect people's opinion, whether you like it or not, because us a talk show host, you must be independent vocal wise. Really? First of all, you obviously don't know what a talk show host is, right? You know why at the beginning of the show, the station says that the views and opinions of the host and their guests are not necessarily views and opinions of the station, because you're allowed to have views and opinions for yourself. And I respect people's right to have opinions, but I don't respect every opinion. I don't, because some opinions are silly, stupid, ignorant, and wrong, right? Some of you are just too sensitive to your own egos. You are too arrogant to your own self, and you're trying to put it on me. But I understand where you are, man. You're hurt. I understand. This Texas Parliament is on a break from today until September 14th. Yeah, that's the summer break. All right. This text says, I get a tickle out of you and that laugh. Enjoy your show. Man, I do, man. No matter how much some of these little haters around trying to vex up your vexation. You know, lots of people project on you, you know. Their own insecurities, their own insensitivities, their own fragile egos. They try to put that on you. Man, if you ain't get it by now, that I think could be moved by that stuff, something wrong with you. You got to get it by now. We're going to take our final break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live on Chicago Line, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Hello? Can you show you something else, boy?
Who this is? Tamika?
You ain't even remember my name?
Wildred. Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning a trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you got to get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I say, I'm not under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO WHO, Canada, and USAID.
Life is full of complicated things. Trading in the Bahamian stock market doesn't have to be one of them. As a BSIC registered broker, RF Stock Brokerage is your direct line to buying and selling shares in publicly traded companies like AML, Cable Bahamas, Doctors Hospital, and more. And with priority trading and the automatic deposit of your trade proceeds and dividend payments, with RF, you're going to love the way you trade. get started today at rfgroup.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Olain, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. You can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I want to comment on this something again. You know, I want people to realize that you're going to meet a lot of people in your lifetime who are not comfortable in their own skins. And the truth is, I mean, literally, I'm not even being offensive. The truth is, a lot of folk, they really have fragile egos. They really feel insecure in themselves. And a lot of this springs from their upbringing, their childhood. They feel like they don't really matter a lot in the world. And so their opinions are extensions of themselves. And so when you oppose that opinion, they feel attacked personally. Now you don't want to offend people unnecessarily. But you have to be careful that people don't make you think that because they see your challenge of their opinion as an attack on them as a person, that you have in fact attacked them. Because if your words spoke to their thoughts, you have nothing to say about their person. Let me give you a difference. If you say to somebody, that is an uninformed idea you just gave, that was not to say to them you are ignorant. Okay? When you say you are stupid, you are foolish, you are ignorant, that's an attack on a person's person. But to describe a thought as foolish, let me give you a foolish thought. Black people are inferior to white people. That's a stupid thought. It's dumb and stupid. Let me give you another stupid thought. Women are inferior to men. That's dumb and stupid and ignorant, I thought. I am never going to feel put off by saying to somebody, that's an ignorant thought you just gave, that's stupid, it's foolish. What you will never hear me say is, you are a stupid person, you are a foolish person, you are a dumb person, you don't matter. You will never hear me say that. But I am never going to let anyone make me feel bad about attacking some opinion they have as if I'm attacking them. Okay? The Bible says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The fool. Now, what the Bible doing? Attacking the man? The Bible don't respect the man's opinion that there ain't no God? Don't let people do that to you, John. Go find a means to heal that wound in you that makes you feel like what you say and who you are the same thing. I have said ignorant things in my life. I have said dumb things in my life. I have said foolish things in my life. I am not those things I said, and I have had to correct dumb, foolish, ignorant things I may have said in life. So, but I don't take an attack on my thought as an attack on me, but I will defend my thought if I believe it's worth defending, and sometimes passionately so. All right, so let's go. So let me tell you the fourth thing that really surprised me in politics. You know how, like, you get on a team, right? You get on a team and you say, well, we're a team. We're the Lakers, we're the Bulls, we're the F&Ms, we're the PLPs, you know, we're the DNA, we're the, and you get on these teams, they're supposed to be teams. What surprised me is how clannish these teams can be. Like within the team itself, you have cliques of people and they are ferociously opposed to each other. Listen to me, as a young candidate, like as a candidate period, that really surprised me that people had these factions against each other within your constituency organizations, within the F&M organization, within the PLP organization. And so you had this one camp, that one camp, the next one. You know how Paul said, some people say I'm a Paul and the other one say I'm a Silas, right? And the other one say I'm a Price. Yeah, that's exactly what happens in political organizations. You get it even in government. This one camp, but that one camp, but the next one camp. Man, and you got to navigate that very dangerous minefield of cliquishness and clannishness, because you know if you rub this group the wrong way, all of a sudden all hell breaks loose in your organization, and now you're putting out fires as opposed to serving the people. It really surprised me. The clannishness gets so, they really get vicious. They get vicious, and both mostly in terms of verbal assaults people put on each other, right? And you as the MP or the candidate, you're the one who got to be dealing with all these sides. And if you're not wise, you're gonna further cause division in your organization, your group. And some of these clans and cliquishness, they stem generations, Jack. Right? This didn't just come up. You met them in Blakes. They got names associated with them. They got factions that are long-standing associated with them. And they still exist to this day. It's Texas, Kadesh Chicago. I always enjoy your shows. You bring balance, knowledge, and continuous education. Keep pressing on. Don't mind your haters. Let them motivate you to continue pressing on. Remember, there are more of us with you than against you. I appreciate that very much. Really, really appreciate it. boy, I appreciate it. Okay, so yeah, so they're clans, boy. If you're a young candidate, you know, unfortunately, like I found that parties give you a great deal of help with organizing for your campaign and, you know, structuring your setup and so forth. But some of these nuances about the people relations you end up dealing with, you don't get a lot of insights about. And if you did, me, I was fortunate because my mother been in politics a long time. My mother been around politics a long time. She is very knowledgeable, very wise about stuff. So she was able to say to me, but listen, be careful here. Be careful there, you know, don't pay no attention to that, don't hurt your head on that, so forth and so forth. So give me some perspective, you know. I was also fortunate because Hubert Ingram was also a good resource, so that if I had an inquiry, I could go and ask. Janet Boswick, similarly, Ivy Dumont, similarly, you know, Frank Watson, Tommy Turnquest, Algernon Allen, you know, a great number of them became people I could go to and bounce things off and kind of, I never regarded myself as so special and such a high flyer that I wasn't prepared to go and ask questions so I could get some guidance from people. To this day, I remember things that some of them said to me that really helped me. Tommy Turnquest told me, say, Chivago, listen, if you can't stand to hear something you said again and in a way that you didn't say it, don't say it. That's what he said to me. In other words, you gotta listen, man. Don't think when you say it and say it, it's between me and you, it can stay between me and you, because it may, not only is it not gonna stay between you and them, it ain't gonna be said the way you said it to them. So if you don't want to get caught in that, don't say it. Algernon Allen told me, listen, man, you see that criticism? I know it's sin. But in a little while, that'll be like water off a duck's back. Sure as night fall a day was true. Right? Mr. Ingram used to say to me, boy, Chicago, don't change much about your lifestyle because you're now in the office. Don't do that. You carry right on. Right? So I was able to navigate some of that clannishness on that basis. What's my fifth most surprising thing? This was really a surprise. I have to tell you, this was really a surprise to me. Now, before you go into politics, you hear so many negativities about the public service. You hear people, oh, they complain, but public service is lazy, they corrupt, they are political, they this, they that. You hear politicians who are in office talk, but oh, they're keeping our agenda back, they're stopping us from making progress. I mean, you hear this stuff, right? And you hear it, so it forms a background to your thinking when you go into the public service. Listen to me. I was shocked to know that a great deal of that ain't nothing but nonsense and crap. Civil servants have demonstrated in the 10 non-consecutive years of my being in the public service, administering the public service, they have demonstrated a level of professionalism that is absolutely outstanding compared to the nonsense you hear when you're outside of politics. Absolute professionals, especially at the senior level, absolute professionals. Them permanent secretaries, undersecretaries, and deputy permanent secretaries, and them absolute professionals. First assistant secretaries and second assistant, they are absolute professionals. Not all, but most of them, absolute professionals seeking to do their job to the best of their ability. It really was a pleasant surprise. And you know what? Mrs. Ingram told me that within 2 years of coming to office, he told me, listen, I heard him telling us that notion that these folks are working against you is a false notion, because a civil servant would be hard-pressed not to follow or carry out an instruction that's lawfully given to them. And that was my experience. So it was really, it was a pleasant surprise for me to experience the professionalism of civil servants as a political directorate in the government of the Bahamas. All right, so that's my five. I trust you have a wonderful, wonderful evening. It's been good being with you. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. God bless you. Have a great evening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. God's best life.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.